Yeah, so I have Martin Olson and his daughter Livy Olson. They're both great entertainers. I could just say, if that one label, entertainers. But to go a little further, Martin's a comedy writer of legend. He's done so many things. He's written plays, screenplays, comedy specials. He's worked with all the greats, Robin Williams, Whoopi Goldberg, Jonathan Winters, the list goes on. And his daughter, Livy Olson, she is building up an impressive resume. A lot of people know her for Love Actually, which was in 2003 when she sang that song, All I Want for Christmas Is You. And she's worked amazing jobs here as the voice of Vanessa on Phineas and Ferb, and of course Marceline the Vampire Queen on Adventure Time. And what I want to do in this interview is I want to cover the big stuff. I'll just chat a little bit about your careers. Of course, talk about the Adventure Time Encyclopedia. And maybe start off with the Encyclopedia of Hell. And I'm curious, since that's your first full-fledged book, Martin. And,
right.
Before that, you were known for, well, a lot of other things. But did you find that was like a landmark, like that was a significant stepping stone or something when you had that book? Book out in the world, and it did so well. Let me quote a little bit from it, just to give people a taste.
I have
it's such a big book, but there's like I just think this is just priceless. But despite their strangeness, humans are not to be feared. Relatively speaking, they are the least substantial of creatures, tiny, querulous bugs trapped in jars of time, quaintly naming themselves Jack and Jill, and then flickering in and out of existence. And that's the Satan part of his introduction to the book. Could you tell us, I mean, and the book is so artful and poetic and crazy and fun. Can you tell us a little bit about how that book came about?
Yeah, thanks. First of all, hi, Henry.
Hello.
How are you?
I had to get through all that introduction, so just to set the stage.
That was awesome. That was beautiful. And you've met my daughter on the wire, Olivia. She's at
Hello.
A different location. We have
Hello.
A little party call here.
Three-way call.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, the book came about because I worked as a comedy writer in Hollywood, and I come from Boston, and with my friends started the first comedy club there, and then when some of those comedians I worked with became famous, they invited me out to be their head writer for some of their specials and so on for HBO or other TV things.
Yeah.
So it eventually led up to me writing movies, and I lucked out and sold a spec script to DreamWorks.
Spielberg?
Yeah.
And so that was the doing of my agent and business partner, Annette Van Duren, who's been a wonderful ally. And so as a result of selling the screenplay I bought a house and took a year off to write the book I wanted to write, which was this Hell book. So the background is, since I'm a comedy writer, my favorite platform for comedy is Mark Twain's vision of Satan, where you can just basically go for it. You don't have to, I mean, it's the most beautiful satiric platform to stand on, because you all bets are off and you can satirize everything.
Yeah.
And Satan is kind of a fool, obviously, because he's only seeing half of existence and almost trapped into his viewpoint. So that's why I wrote it. And I worked for like that year on it, and then I worked on it for another year. What's that?
Yeah, it's a little longer than a year.
Yeah, well, I had the idea for many years, but finally just got it done in that year, 2-year period.
Oh, yeah.
But then I sold the film rights to that, luckily, because it's an encyclopedia, through Andrew Lazar at Warner Brothers. That was unexpected. And then, based on that, ended up Ken Ward, who created the Adventure Time children's show, or whatever you want to call this artful masterpiece of television, animated TV, he was a fan of the Hell book.
Oh, I see, I see. Yeah, because so it does mirror a lot of the book.
Yeah,
the format.
Funny.
Yeah.
Well, here's what happened. He asked me, he was a fan of the book, and I was so thrilled because the guy's a super genius. And he asked, this is Pendleton Ward who created Adventure Time. So he asked if we could use the same writer, same illustrators, and the same book designer and make it about his world with the same voice. So he asked me to play Olivia's father on the show.
Yeah.
So I'm not an actor, and I told him that, but he just said, look, just go with it, and I'll tell you what to say. So that was just a fluke that that happened, and that's how the book came about.
Basically. The voice of Satan, basically.
Yeah, I play the devil on the show. And both books are from the voice of Satan, the devil, who is actually an idiot. So that's my long-winded introduction of how that happened.
No, that's cool, because... And that's a good way to segue into. I wanted to ask you some questions about the Adventure Time Encyclopedia. There's, I guess, for fans, they're going to get a. And I guess everything has been okayed by Pendleton Ward, because you seem to add some stuff that maybe people don't hasn't been put into the book yet. I feel like I've seen a lot of episodes, but has the Mushroom War been really talked about a lot in the actual Adventure Time series, or is that something that you're bringing in?
It was funny because they the Mushroom War was in the series. It's a post apocalyptic series, and I understand, Henry, what you're talking about, because it's a very vast backstory of this seemingly simple.
It goes on and on and on.
Yeah. I feel like I've watched a lot of episodes, but at the same time, I'm no expert. But
yeah, sure.
I feel the same way. I work on the show, and I'm still no expert.
Well,
they keep just blindsiding you with all these crazy twists and turns.
My daughter had a question for you, Olivia. She's 17, and I asked her. I told her I'm going to be interviewing the actress that plays Marceline the Vampire Queen, and her father, Hunsen Abadir. And she did a double take, and she did like, what? She did like it was the most amazing thing in the world, which is it is totally understandable. And
pretty big deal.
It is. What's interesting to me is that people do, I have a long thought about this, but I'll try to just chop it up a bit here and just give you the
sure.
Yeah, people will get really completely into whatever character, whether it's Game of Thrones or Adventure Time, and they'll treat them like they're real people. At the same time, a lot can be said for fictional characters being more real than people, the average person, or the everyday existence we have sometimes seems unreal compared to a really vibrant, thought-provoking character in fiction.
Isn't that a weird phenomenon? It's true. Since old times, with just heroes from books, or the old days when people would tell oral histories or stories, the heroes. And one of the things in Adventure Time is the idea of the hero. So I think that's one of the reasons why it resonates super well with kids, because it really latches on to the heroic a lot.
Getting back to the question that Emma had, she had to really think about this. She was speechless. She couldn't think of a question right off the bat. And then she thought, well, okay, if you're going to ask Marceline a question or Olivia a question, ask her what does she think about when she thinks about vampires, and does that help her role, or what are her thoughts on vampires?
You know, I definitely, when I was like a couple years ago in high school, I was so about the vampire craze. I read all the Twilight books and stuff like that. So I thought it was pretty cool when I was, you know, cast as this vampire queen. But I think, I actually have to say that I think Marceline is a way cooler, more gruesome vampire than the way that, like, the media has come to portray vampires as these, like, sex symbols.
Yeah.
And, like, these, well, these tragic love stories and things like that. But I think Marceline really, she kind of sticks to, like, you know, an old school vampire of being, you know, just a, yes, she's a damn soul, but she's strong and badass, and that's what I like about her. And I think that's what makes a lot of, you know, the fans really resonate with my character. They want to see, they want to, you know, feel strong, and she totally exudes that.
That's really cool. I would make an observation, and I, again, from just from what I have been able to glean over the last day or so, that you appear to make really very smart choices with your roles, and they seem to always have a positive side to them. And I saw the, for instance, the Ellen DeGeneres segment that you did years ago, Well, the whole thing with Phineas and Ferb. Now, I have to admit, I was not that into Phineas and Ferb. I didn't know about it, really. I wasn't familiar with it, but I've seen it since. And that show is really, I'm really impressed with it. It has a really good biting sense of comedy. And I know that there's legions of Vanessa fans out there, too. Is that something that you're glad to... The whole experience, what do you think of the Vanessa experience compared to Marceline, or are they two completely different things?
Yeah, I mean, I would have to say it's pretty different. I definitely didn't, you know, experience as much of the hype, really, when I was just playing Vanessa. She's a smaller role on the show. She's still a very interesting, cool character, and I think that's why she was able to have, like, this sort of bizarre following that I wasn't even expecting. I think it definitely took off a lot more with the Adventure Time craze, because, I mean, the Phineas and Ferb fans, they're great, and... But a lot of the times it is directed towards a lower age demographic. But I think with Adventure Time, I mean, the way the fans have really turned it into this, like, cult. Like, literally, it's like a cult. And the fans are just so into it and so rabid and crazy. And I think that's really when I kind of saw the power of... how much a cartoon can really affect people, because I suddenly had my peers being like, oh, I love that show, and it's so great. And I think that the Marceline fans kind of even almost upped the Vanessa fans in a weird way, because they are sort of similar characters.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it?
Well, I guess...
They both have evil dads.
That's so crazy.
Well, I guess Adventure Time...
Thing.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Oh, just to jump in with one thing is that Dan Povenmire and Swampy Marsha created the Phineas and Ferb Disney show that Olivia plays Vanessa, and share something with Pendleton Ward, who created Adventure Time, because the shows are vastly different because of the audience, but they're a lot alike in the high IQ of both shows. And
totally.
While both shows are also anarchic and kind of like the humor is not normal. The humor is very in your face and confrontative in both shows. And they both, Ken and Dana Swampy, are big fans of having emotion happening. But that isn't possible as much in the Disney show. But there are moments when it brings tears with some of the relationships with Candace and stuff and with Vanessa and her dad. But the interesting thing is that Adventure Time, sometimes, some episodes, there's not a joke to be found. I mean, there's a little comic relief. But it just wrenches your heart. And that's why that show, for an older audience, has created such a fan base, because you just sob watching some of the episodes.
A lot with Phineas and Ferb, it's kind of... It's the same template, sort of, for each episode.
Yeah,
where, you know, the boys invent something, Candace is trying to bust them, Doofenshmirtz is up to no good, and somehow it all ties in together for this crazy day, and at the end of the day, Candace still doesn't bust her brothers.
Yeah.
But with Adventure Time, it's different. They'll have a total, a really sad, deep episode that really makes you, like, want to cry, and then next week it'll be all fart jokes. It's just, like, it's so random with that. So it's genius the way that they really haven't, I mean, it's both shows are, the writing is just great, but I think it's definitely hard to come up with such great storylines for Phineas and Ferb when you're kind of put in a pattern like that. So Adventure Time has more of a free range of how to
Well, you know what's
it.
Interesting about that, Olivia? Yeah. I don't know if we've even talked about this, but maybe we have. The Phineas and Ferb show became so huge in terms of fans with children and adults, because the story is always the same. So it's very, very similar to the strange structure of the show, I don't know if you know, Columbo, where you
we used to watch,
right.
We watched like 8 seasons of those when I was a kid.
Well, that show, for example, briefly, is always the same structure. You see the murder
up front,
then halfway through, the Columbo's brought in, and then it's cat and mouse with him. You know the ending. It's inevitable. You always know it's going to end. But it's the getting there that's the fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's the brilliance of the writing. So that's what
that's what I was saying about that. I mean, it's so cool that it's been able to, you know, have such crazy out there, you know, episodes and stuff like that, because it really is. It's the same structure of each episode, but, you know, it can go to so many different places.
Yeah, Phineas and Ferb's high IQ comedy was a result of, like, a puzzle. You know what the shape of it is, you just don't know how it's going to end up.
That's a great way to put it. Yeah, I was thinking about Columbo, and I love that one character actor. He was an extremely dapper man, and he appeared, like, in maybe 2 or 3 episodes as the villain, and
what was his name?
Very,
he was in Murder by the Book, the first pilot, I think.
Yeah, and there were a few really good villains, and they were sweating bullets. They kind of thought maybe Columbo knew, and it's, no, he's so such a bumbling idiot.
Robert Culp was good, too, in that.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what an audience wants for that show. They want they know what to expect, and they want to just enjoy it. And so, and Adventure Time's multi-layered and...
Adventure Time is freeform and goes as deep or as lighthearted as it wants. Phineas and Ferb is a set structure that automatically requires a high IQ story, automatically.
Yeah.
So then what happens is you offset that by the goofiest, craziest humor ever. So those two formulas are opposite, but they both luckily became that shows.
Heartbreaking beauty, and I got to listen to some of the tracks. And what's interesting is they're so different from each other. Oh, Mistress Mine is so different from Murdering Sun, and Sorry, I Don't Like Your Face. Some are sweet ballads, some are really funky, others are country western. Did you guys set out to do that, or to make it really different in, with each song just about? Or?
Well, for me, because Olivia has her own CD, BB's Chaos, and that she wrote the songs for that. For this one, I wrote most of them, but she collaborated on several of them. But the idea was to just...
it was just to have fun, you know? We were kind of...
That's right.
Just not even really expecting it to be an album so much.
Right.
Just kind of... You were just writing fun and quirky songs, and then you'd come up with, you know, a deep song, and kind of just recorded for the heck of it to do some fun music. And then, lo and behold, you know, 7 years later, there's all these songs, and we're like, you know what, we can make an album of this.
Yeah, that's really how it happened. We didn't do it for anyone except ourselves. It was fun, father-daughter time spent doing something creative, so that was great. And I guess the models would be, I'm a big fan of Charles Ives, the American composer, and the Beatles also did records with, like, Sgt. Pepper's, where they did all different styles. So those were always fun because it was unexpected.
Well, I had a couple of notes here, and you can do whatever you like with this, possibly.
Sure.
I put in Miley Cyrus, Syria, and I was thinking, as a comedy writer, how do you react to the topical stuff? Do you jump on it and think anything that's in the news is going to be a joke eventually, or some things maybe not so funny or too early to be funny, or some things you just don't bother?
Well, sure, that's the classical fodder for comedy writing, taking what's happening because it's the most relatable, but I don't do that at all. I don't think I've ever written a topical joke. Part of it is I don't know anything that's going on. I don't even watch TV. I don't even know what TV shows are.
It seems like yourself is more on the experimental side, or
it's more like just pure paradox and joke structure and stuff, not dealing with any references to anything. So it's just stories that have curl up on themselves. Or the Encyclopedia of Hell book, you know, that's 2,000 jokes.
Yeah.
So it's basically jokes about humanity and human behavior from the satanic point of view, which is what's funny about it, because it's like an alien point of view, so you could pretty much, like I said, all bets are off in terms of the jokes.
But it is the way that he talks about humans is so straightforward, and it's so true, which is really funny, because it's so, you know, humans can be so idiotic, even though we're very intelligent beings.
We try.
Yeah. So I think that what's funny, too, is that Satan is a moron. He is ignorant of good and of anything to do with goodness. So his blind spot is preposterous. And so his constant railing against humanity, which is very highly intellectual, is also funny on the level that he doesn't know that he's an idiot.
Mm-hmm. Well, in closing, I wanted to ask you, Olivia, could you describe what it's like to have such a crazy creative dad growing up?
Oh, my God.
Oh, goodness. I honestly don't even know where it comes from. Like, I it's kind of... Don't get a big head when I say this, Dad, but it's, like, inspiring the fact that, you know, he can just come up with so much right on the spot. Like, I feel like he's set to this task of writing Phineas and Ferb, where it's, what, 2 scripts a week and, like, 5 songs a week?
Yeah, I'm actually
something
the slowest.
Like that.
I'm the slowest writer here at Phineas and Ferb. These guys are super, super fast.
My concepts are more. You are the slowest of speed demon, super creative geniuses, then, because okay. I don't even understand it, because I hope one day I can be able to spit out material that's half as funny or interesting as the stuff that you can do.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. But the main thing is the songwriting we both do quickly, so that's a talent that we both share, so that's good.
Yeah. Well, that's a great spot to close, and thank you once again for doing this.
Well, one thing, Henry, is I wanted to make sure that if anyone was interested or a fan of Olivia's knew about her CD, which is on iTunes, which is called Liv, can you talk about it for a second?
Yes.
Oh,
it's,
sure, I'm sorry.
The very first EP of me, Olivia Olson, it's called Beauty is Chaos, and it's available for download on iTunes.
Cool. I just took
it
for granted.
As well as the father-daughter album, which is also available.
Well, like I said, you guys do so many things, but I'm glad that we got that squared away.